This is the third shiur exploring the exchange between the Lubavitch Rebbe and Rabbi Emanuel Jacobowitz on whether or not it's a good idea to return lands or to give away lands from Eretz Yisrael to other parties in the hope of getting peace, or the doctrine of land for peace. And this has been an issue already since 1967. This exchange happened in the early 1980s. This is a letter from February 1981, Yud Gimel Shvat, Tav Shin Mem Aleph. But it's a discussion that's still perennially relevant. Unfortunately, even in 2024, there's still discussion of giving away Judea and Samaria. So first, let's just look at Rabbi Jacobowitz's response to the Rebbe. Rabbi Jacobowitz thought there were several reasons that it would be a good idea to give away land. Number one, he said there are rabbis who've reached the same conclusion regarding the territories because of the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. So here Rabbi Jacobowitz is saying that, Lubavitch Rebbe, you're saying that you don't want to give away land because of Pikuach Nefesh, but really there are many who are saying the reason why we shouldn't give away land has nothing to do with Pikuach Nefesh, but rather with the sanctity of the land of Israel, to the point that perhaps we should even sacrifice lives for the sanctity of the land of Israel. Next, Rabbi Jacobowitz says, everyone agrees that Pikuach Nefesh supersedes Shabbos as well as any other consideration. For this teaching, we do not require the straw and hay rule. The straw and hay rule is that if non-Jews are coming to a border town, and they're ostensibly only coming to get straw and hay, we're still able to violate Shabbos in order to fend them off because their coming might be a portent of more serious attacks to come. The argument among rabbis, as among others, is not about this teaching or this rule, but on what constitutes pikuach nefesh in the present situation. The fate of Israel and the lives of its Jews depend just as much on factors beyond the competence of military experts. For instance, Jewish lives could be endangered by sanctions or economic collapse, leading to starvation, or by Arabs becoming a majority, by retaining over a million Arabs within Israel, multiplying at twice the Jewish rate, or by a dramatic decline in the Jewish population through mass emigration, itself caused by political and economic factors, as well as despair on the prospect of peace. Hence, the opinion of political and other experts can have no lesser bearing on the finding of Pikuach Nefesh than purely military calculations, and I entirely agree on the Sinai oil. So here, Rabbi Jacobowitz is making 2 points. Number one, he's saying that the Rebbe's claim was that we shouldn't give away land because the military experts say it's a bad idea. Says Rabbi Jacobowitz, well, maybe if we don't give away land, there will be economic collapse, or there will be Arabs within Israel, and the Arabs within Israel will multiply at a high rate, and they will thereby cause Israel to lose its Jewish character by outnumbering the Jewish people. And then furthermore, Rabbi Jacobowitz is saying that it was in fact a bad idea to give away the Sinai Desert because Israel lost tremendous oil reserves in doing so. Rabbi Jacobowitz continues, surely any God-fearing Jew, let alone the Rebbe, must affirm that the ultimate security of Jews in the land of Israel lies neither in armies nor in borders, but in our spiritual worthiness through study of Torah and the practice of mitzvahs. And this must be our overriding and most urgent aim, as well as the principal teaching of all rabbis, as confirmed by the whole of our sources and our history. So here, Rabbi Jacobowitz is saying that rabbis should stay out of politics and rabbis should just encourage people to engage in Torah mitzvahs. So now let's look at the Rebbe's response. And the Rebbe's response is stated before. It's a letter dated Yud Gimel Shvat, Tav Shin Mem Aleph. And the Rebbe is addressing the letter to Mr. Pinchas Peter Combs, who was the go-between between Rabbi Jacobowitz and the Rebbe. He writes, greeting and blessing. I am in receipt of your correspondence, enclosing a copy of the letter of January 5th, pursuant to my letter of the 3rd of Hanukkah. I must confess that after reading the letter carefully, I still have to reiterate what I wrote at the beginning of my previous letter, namely, that I find it difficult to understand how my position can be misunderstood. Before responding to the comments of the January 5th letter, I must again emphasize the basic premise on which my stand rests, which is the only subject matter for discussion. Unless this basic premise and frame of reference is clearly understood and adhered to, a debate could go on indefinitely at cross purposes. Any extraneous issue that does not bear directly on the basic premise is irrelevant and confusing. The only subject matter under discussion, at any rate, from my treatment of it, is the purely halachic subject of pikuach nefesh as it affects the question of returning any part of the liberated areas. Be it also remembered that we are not dealing with an academic question, but one of actuality and urgency, since definite action has been taken in regard to some areas in Sinai, and as regards to others, Yehuda, Shomron, and Golan, etc., commitments have been made, and some of them would have probably been surrendered long ago, but for the fact that the other side refused to take them, demanding more. Since the subject of the matter, as noted, is purely halachic, namely the question of pikuach nefesh, the sanctity of the territories is relevant. So is irrelevant one's political affiliation or philosophy, or one's personal attitude to the government and the like. A rabbi has to rule on the matter purely from the objective viewpoint of halacha, without allowing any other considerations or opinions, however strongly he may feel about them, to cloud his halachic judgment. With the above in mind, I will now respond to the comments point by point. Number one, the reference to my stand on Zionism and the Jewish state as a factor in the Pesach Din is, of course, quite irrelevant. As noted above, for as has been emphatically emphasized also in my previous letter, the halacha applies equally to Eretz Yisrael and everywhere else. It is curious that I have been placed in the same breath in the category of Gush Emunim and Kahana, who stand on Zionism on the Jewish state as such is not questioned. Though in actual facts, their position on the return of the territory is not based on Zionism and the Jewish state, but on the Bible, on the Bris Ben Absorium, the covenant between the parts, the covenant between God and Abraham. This only goes to show how by bringing in extraneous issues, the central and real issue could be sidetracked and confused. I have stated repeatedly, also in my previous letter, that my unequivocal stand against returning any part of Yehudah Shomron is the same as on returning the Sinai oil wells and any part of Sinai. Even those rabbis who reach the same conclusion on the territories precisely because of the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael will admit there is no question of sanctity involved in regard to Sinai and Sinai oil, but it is only a question of pikuach nefesh, plain and simple. Point two. The contention that the argument among rabbis is not about the rule of pikuach nefesh, but on what constitutes pikuach nefesh in the present situation is true, of course. I already addressed that point in my previous letter, though I did not wish to overemphasize it for obvious reasons. I pointed out that the other rabbis based their evaluation of the present situation on misinformation presented to them together with the question. I cited one glaring information of the misinformation in that the rabbis were told that the government had ample oil reserves to last for months. Another item of misinformation was the situation in Eretz Yisrael as described to them as not being comparable to the situation in the Gemara in Erevin, which speaks of, that is not being comparable with the situation that the Gemara in Erevin speaks of, where the enemy is actually besieging the Jews and there is a danger of further penetration. This is obviously a misrepresentation, for everybody knows that the Golan, Shomron, and Yehuda are at the very borders of Syria and Jordan, which are under strong influence of the PLO, etc. These avowed enemies are not only besieging Eretz Yisrael, but have actually carried out bloody attacks and openly declared their determined intention to take everything back by force. A further distinction between the existing situation and that of the Gemara, on which the opinion of those rabbis was partially formulated, was that in the case of the Gemara, the Gemara situation, the enemy came to take straw and hay that belonged to Jews, whereas in the present situation, the enemy is demanding the return of territories that have been taken from them. This argument, too, has been published anonymously. Of course, I can have no debate with those who believe that the Arabs have a legitimate claim for the return of territories that belong to them, because there is no common ground on which to debate. But they should surely keep in mind that if the Arabs have a legitimate claim to the pre-67 territories, then they have an equally legitimate claim to the Old City. To be sure, a dayan, a rabbinic judge, must rule on the basis of testimony before his eyes. But the public is entitled to know precisely what arguments and reasons he arrived at his decision. And this is something one is entitled to know, even if the Pesach Din concerns one pruta, one penny, not to mention the pikuach nefesh with 3 million Jews. If there is an error in facts, a dayan should readily retract. Number three. The rabbis who declare that territories may be used further for peace, based on their opinion, among other things, on the information supplied to them, not by military experts, that territorial concessions would advance the cause of peace with Arabs. Hence, they argue that the principle of Yikuach Nefesh is at the root of the straw and hay rule is not relevant to the situation at hand, but the contrary. Actually, it is clear from the Sefer Halacha that the deciding factor is not what the enemy demands or promises, but whether it is a case of Tiftach Aretz Bifneim, opening the land for the enemy. In other words, giving them an opportunity to breach the defenses. Whether or not the return of territories will indeed be such a case is, of course, for the military experts to decide and not for politicians. To argue that the fate of the country and the lives of the people depend also on factors beyond the competence of military experts, and that if political and economic factors will be ignored, it will lead to pikuach nefesh later on, does not affect the immediate decision relating to the return of territories. All the more so since it is certain that returning further territories will immediately weaken security, and it would be an irreversible act, whereas the political and economic climate is unpredictable. So are, by and large, the other arguments that territorial concessions under certain conditions might reduce the threat of war or enhance Israel's ability to defend itself, etc. These are highly speculative conjectures and I am certain that no military commander would bet on such chances. I repeat, the halacha is clear, and that it is, after all, the viewpoint of the halacha that is at the heart of this debate. Point 4. With regard to the misinformation, it is surely astounding, and I regret it very much. I am accused of charging men like Dayan, Weitzman, and other countless knowledgeable Israelis with being misinformed. I could not have been more explicit and specific in my letter on the 3rd of Hanukkah that I was speaking of misinformation supplied to rabbis by interested parties. It is true, of course, that all rabbis have access to the same information on what the situation is, but unfortunately they did not make use of this access and didn't bother to check it out, as in the case of Sinai Oil, etc. Point 5. I welcome the comment, I entirely agree on Sinai Oil, etc. It, of course, bears out my position, except that I see no difference between surrendering the Sinai Oil, or an inch of Sinai, and surrendering an inch of Judea, Samaria, and Golan, and I cannot envision a prolonged period of absolutely normal relations with all Arab neighbors, except in the Messianic era, when the wolf will dwell together in peace with the lamb. Point 6. With regard to the Chil Hashem argument that I referred to, I clearly explained in my previous letter and suggest a further perusal. Point 7. I do not understand what is so completely puzzling about this point. Of course, every God-fearing Jew must affirm that the security of Jews anywhere in the world, particularly in the Holy Land, lies with the study of Torah and the practice of mitzvos. But when it comes to the question of pikuach nefesh, as indeed in any situation, be it a matter of health or livelihood, God himself ordained that in addition to the strict observance of Torah and mitzvahs, an absolute bitachon in him, a Jew is required to do what is necessary in the natural order of things. This, too, is part of the teachings of the rabbis. Point 8. The strange charge against the Israeli government of complicity, my emphasis with terrorists, would indeed be puzzling, nay shocking, if any Jew makes a charge against another Jew, let alone against a government. I must admit, however, that though I have been accused of very strange things, this is the first time that such an accusation has been imputed to me. I stand by my statement that there is a school of thought in the government that holds that it would be expedient not to press the hunt for the killers in the ground, that to finally put them on trial, etc., would exacerbate tensions. Therefore, it would be better to put the matter at rest by procrastination. Point 8, letter on 3rd of Hanukkah. But this is a far cry from complicity with terrorists, not to mention all the other epithets attributed to said school by the writer, which cannot be repeated, especially as the whole matter is irrelevant to the central issue. I stand by my charge of playing down terrorist attacks, etc., as stated in my previous letter. As to the question, would Israel's public opinion really have tolerated such a policy? Anyone who has been following the press in Israel over the past years knows the subject has cropped up from time to time in various newspapers, from various directions and viewpoints, in articles and editorials. Be it remembered, this is not a case of indifference or negligence, for no one questions the deep concern of any Jew about terrorist attacks. It is a question of well-intentioned, though in my opinion ill-conceived, policy. As a matter of fact, though I do not want to mention my previous letter, there are also rabbis who agree with the said school on the basis of our rabbi's teachings, Althus Gara Begay Katon, which means do not incite a small Gentile, and especially when we're not dealing with small Gentiles, but rather large Gentiles, powerful Gentiles. Point 9. With respect to the policies pursued by Gush Emunim, which, as stated before, Gush Emunim was a influential religious Zionist settler movement, which still exists today, not under that name, but the ideology still exists, I do not know what this has to do with the debate. I only respond to the charge against me of being more political than rabbinic, with the obvious reply that in a matter of pikuach nefesh, of saving lives, every Jew, rather or not, is obligated by halacha to use every possible means to prevent Jewish lives from being lost, including personal relationships and influence with any personage that can be helpful in the situation. Point 10. With regard to the matter of demonstrations, etc., I regret to note that it is expressly implied in the letter that these were Lubavitch inspired. It is clearly implied and taken for granted that I had been either consulted about it or had foreknowledge that rabbis and men loyal to Lubavitch are planning such action, and that a simple hint from me would have stopped it. I fail to understand a priori how a rabbi can make such a categorical accusation on the basis of inference or assumption, and I repeat that after I had emphatically denied any prior knowledge of the whole incident, and first became aware of it from the press. Whether some people involved in it were Lubavitch and acting as such is alleged, I do not know to this day. I am inclined to think that the allegation is based on information, especially that according to reliable information I received through learning of the demonstrations to the press and subsequently inquiring about them, these were organized by two groups, neither of them Lubavitch, with headquarters in Eretz Yisrael. I am therefore entitled to know and would be obliged for the names of the alleged rabbis and men loyal to Lubavitch who participated in this incident. Besides, The term loyal to Lubavitch is rather vague, since loyalty is a term that can be stretched indefinitely. Also, the matter of the alleged summons is something that I first learned from this letter of January 5th. And since I have been dragged into this, I am surely entitled to specific information, including the names of the perpetrators who are Lubavitch or Lubavitch loyalists, so I can investigate the matter further. The Rebbe notes that the Lubavitch Bezdin knows nothing about all this. With the exception of the last paragraph, I think we can now put the whole debate to the rest. With esteem and blessing, the Rebbe's signature. Now the Rebbe includes a postscript and an addendum. So first the postscript. What follows here pertains to your company correspondence and is therefore written on a separate page so that you have the option of passing it along with the rest of the letter or not. Point one. With regard to the opinion of Dayan, Weitzman, and Rabin, I know they stated clearly from the viewpoint of military expertise that they would not advocate surrender of territory, but from their political viewpoint, some territorial concession may be justified. Point two. The people who misinformed the rabbis in the matter of Sinai oil are all known by name in Eretz Yisrael. As you know, it is not my custom to mention names. Point three. With regard to the argument concerning the old city to the effect one must draw the line somewhere, the halacha of pikuach nefesh is not recognized as an argument, which in fact would be a misinterpretation of halacha and a complete contradiction to it. This has also been clearly indicated in my previous letter. Incidentally, the said argument also contradicts the opinion quoted in the letter of January 5th in the name of Rabbi Soloveitchik, that he would readily give up the Kotel HaMaravi to save a Jewish life. This is also my opinion with this qualification, that the old city, as it was after the Six-Day War, was not in dispute and had no bearing then on the question of opening the land for the enemy. But the position of the old city now was in the same category as Golan, Yehuda, and Shomron. In other words, I would believe that I believe Rabbi Soloveitchik would agree, the sanctity of the old city, including the sanctity of the Kotel, would not justify sacrificing a single Jewish soldier. But when it is a case of opening the land, as it is in the present situation, in relation to Jerusalem beyond the walls, the old city, as any other place, falls under the rule of Pikuach Nefesh that mandates the taking up of arms on Shabbos to defend it, and not because one must draw the line somewhere. Addendum. I have seen from the correspondence that certain points which I had taken for granted as self-evident have not been given sufficient consideration. Hence, this addendum at the risk of some redundance. Point one. The subject matter of controversy centers on a shayla and halacha, namely pikuach nefesh. Therefore, the positions of both the rabbis whose opinions differ from mine, as well as my position, must rest exclusively on the halacha and treated purely as a halachic shayla. Point two, the shayla is not a theoretical one, but a practical one that is high on the agenda, namely whether from the halachic view it is permitted, mandatory, or forbidden to return liberated areas in the so-called West Bank and Gaza, as well as Sinai, including oil wells, military installations, etc. The pesak din on this question must, of course, be based on the actual and factual circumstances of the situation as they affect the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael and our brethren living there. Point three, both sides of the controversy, namely the rabbis who rule that it is halakhically permissible to make territorial concessions, and those, myself included, who oppose this view, based their decisions on the principle of pikuach nefesh, the difference being that the former concluded that territorial concessions would avert or minimize pikuach nefesh, while the latter hold that any territorial concessions would create or aggravate pikuach nefesh. Point four, there can be no difference of opinion among rabbis, and in the case of pikuach nefesh, it is the duty of a rabbi not to remain silent and wait until approached to express his opinion. A rabbi who waits to be approached in such a situation is termed migune, reproachable or blameworthy. Similarly, there can be no difference of opinion about the duty of every Jew, without exception, to do everything possible, consistent with the Shulchan Aruch, to avert the danger of pikuach nefesh. The rabbi himself may not consider his duty done simply by pronouncing his pesak din, but must take every possible action in this direction. Indeed, there are many precedents of Gedolei Yisrael actually doing things in Shabbos and Yom Kippur, which but for the fact that pikuach nefesh would be most serious transgressions. Point five, since as noted, the sole deciding factor is pikuach nefesh, it is quite irrelevant what political orientation or party the rabbi issuing the pesak din subscribes to, for his pesak din must not be influenced in the slightest by anything except halacha alone. Point six, the evidence on which a rabbi or bezdin bases a pesak din must strictly conform to the principle of dun din emes lamitay, that is to say, the judgment must be based on true facts and objective truth. If there is any doubt about the veracity of the presented evidence, it is the rabbi's duty to go and ascertain.